copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Our topic is the amazing power of history to make a difference today. And this has been kind of the theme of my life. I mean, when you get to my age, you've got plenty of history anyway. And so history, my kids were bringing up things, and I said, well, that's not history. I lived through that. But here's what we want to say, I and my colleagues. Telling the story of what God has done in the past with specifics and people and places can honor God. And it's a way to both build a bridge to unbelievers as well as ministering to believers and encouraging them. So our hope is that we will motivate you. The four of us have been engaged in using history for quite a while, and we want to motivate you and others who hear this online to use history as an apologetics tool, as a means to build a bridge to unbelievers and to encourage believers today. So why study history? Well, first of all, the cultural impact. In our pluralistic world, where our evangelical faith is ridiculed and sidelined and considered to be meaningless and unimportant, insignificant, useless, history shows the transformative impact of Christianity. My field is the academy. I lead the European Academic Network. So throughout the year, I'm lecturing at universities all across Europe. And there are many places where I could never get in to give a lecture on apologetics, and certainly not on theology, and probably not on Christian version of philosophy. But a door is open in so many places to speak on history. So we can show the cultural impact of the Christian movement throughout history. Second is our spiritual genealogy. It helps us to know that we are standing on the shoulders of men and women throughout the history since the time of Christ. So it reminds us that we can appreciate the fact that generations before us have been faithful. So when the pressure is on, as it is today here in Europe, we can be reminded men and women have stood under even greater pressure. And so like in the academy, when my colleagues are saying, oh, I could be ridiculed, I could even lose my job. And I advise, yeah, you have to be wise, you have to be cautious. But remember, brothers and sisters, our forefathers have lost far more than their jobs, and they've lost far more than public face when they've stood for Christ. Real people. Studying the history of the Christian movement reminds us that the church has always been led by real people, as Pete Williams reminded us this morning. We're the despicables, but God has worked even through the despicables. And I think it's a time for spiritual growth. When I look at the godly men and women who have tread the way before me, I am inspired to be faithful, to press the bounds, and to reach out for Christ. So we can honor those who came before us as we seek to be faithful today. It's also a reminder that the church is at the same time always fragile and strong. So you look at the history of the church and you realize, my, it is an amazing thing that the church has survived when we see the despicableness of those who made up the church. And yet you realize how strong and resilient the church is. And so, for instance, this past year on Reformation 500, I've been speaking at universities and churches in Europe as well as in America. And every time I speak, people are reminded that the church is strong and Christ's cause will be victorious. And so when we see what God did in the Reformation, we can have new vision and new faith for what he can do during this day. And that provides a context for world events today. When we realize the times, for instance, that the European church has faced a Muslim threat, so to speak, we realize this is not the first time. Or when we see leadership challenges to men and women of God, we realize, oh, this is not new at all. And then, of course, simple little thing here, since we are sola scriptura people, God wants us to study history. I spoke in a church just recently, and I told them, Psalm 111:2 says, greater the works of the Lord, they are pondered by all who delight in them. History is a pondering of the works of God. Psalm 77:14, you are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the peoples. So throughout the Bible, God reminded his people of the importance of remembering what he had done in the past. I mean, think about how important history is in the Bible. Passover. Every time they celebrate the Passover, they're looking back to a historic event. Think about the manna. They were commanded to keep it for the generations to come so they can see the bread I gave you. God said, I don't want you to forget that part of your history. The stones from Jordan, pile them up as a memorial. How long? Forever. God wanted them to remember history. The Lord's Supper. Every time we go forward and celebrate the Lord's Supper, we are celebrating both a historic event and a current reality in our lives. And how many times in the Bible is the miracle of the deliverance from Egypt repeated? It's just over and over. So God thinks history is very important. Why should history serve as a good bridge to unbelievers and believers alike? Well, in my experience, I've found at least three reasons. First of all, history is factual. Now, it's there. So when I go into a university and I'm lecturing on a historical event, for instance, I did a series of lectures in China a while back talking about the Irish monks and how they went from Ireland, spread the gospel all over Scotland, England, and all across Europe, teaching, educating, and evangelizing. And in every lecture hall, there was the minder, the communist minder. And I'd go out to a city, lecture there, fly back to Beijing, fly to a different city the next day, and I did that for I don't know how many days. Now, how could I get away with that, with the Communist Party there every day? Well, I'm talking about history. It's just history. It's innocuous. It seems innocent. And so in every lecture, I was able to give the gospel because I'm talking about a historic event. So it can be less threatening. Number two, because you're just telling them what happened. People can draw their own conclusions. You're not going too far on drawing the conclusion. They can draw the... I was lecturing at a Catholic university just this past month in Lviv, Ukraine. Now, I'm telling about the Reformation as part of my lecture. Well, I'm not preaching at them. I'm just giving an academic lecture. And to explain the Reformation, you've got to explain the gospel, because the gospel is at the center of the Reformation. And so it was less threatening, even in a Catholic university. And history is interesting. I mean, everybody loves a good story. Who doesn't love a good story? So our challenge is to know our history well enough to be able to tell that good story. Now, let me just give you a few examples. I've used history as a bridge, and then my colleagues will give you some even better examples. For many years, my job was to recruit PhDs to go teach in universities outside of North America and the UK. And so I was concerned with how to establish a relationship with universities. And so I made a study of the origin of universities, which of course is Christian. So in 1993, this was my first real foray into using history as an apologetics tool. I did a whole series of lectures like at Peking University and the Department of Philosophy and other universities on how early higher education was entirely a Christian enterprise. Well, then the other side of my job is to recruit professors, like my colleague Chuck White here, that I recruited to go teach Islamic students in Nigeria, and he taught them the life of Christ. How do I recruit nice, tenured, comfortable Christian professors and get them to go a long ways off where it's really uncomfortable? And I thought, I need some model in history where that's happened before. And so I read a new book that had just come out, How the Irish Saved Civilization. Now, with a name like McCarthy, you'll understand why I would be biased to like a book about the Irish, because I am Irish. Well, I started doing my own research after I read Thomas Cahill's book, and I found this was early on in the history of the Catholic Church, where many of those monks were still captivated by their love for Christ, and they were going across Ireland and Scotland and England spreading the gospel. And so I developed a series of lectures that really turned out to make a difference in a lot of places. So, for instance, my wife and I lived in Lithuania for 5 years. And it became a campus tradition. I gave all campus lectures each month. And so every St. Patrick's Day, I gave a lecture on why St. Patrick's Day became a global holiday. Lessons for educators from Patrick and the Irish monks who saved civilization. So there's a lot of Lithuanians now that no longer think of St. Patrick's as a day to get drunk. They now realize this was a day when a really great man made a difference. And I had one student one day in the lecture say, "So why did so many tens of thousands respond to Patrick's message?" And I say, "Well, can you imagine that you had never heard that all the bad things you've done could be forgiven through a free gift that Jesus is offering, that because he died on the cross for your sins? Imagine if you had never heard that." Now, Lithuania is a Catholic country, and you would think they would have heard the gospel. I never met anybody who had heard the gospel through the Catholic Church in Lithuania. But that day, they heard a little taste of the gospel because I was telling the story of Patrick and his message that transformed Ireland. Well, of course, we've had the most wonderful opportunity, and I've been working with my colleague Yaroslav here on Reformation 500. In fact, my good buddy Marian is a Lutheran pastor in just down over the mountain here in Žilina, Slovakia. His Lutheran church was founded in 1540, just 24 years into the Reformation. And so we had a good time there at your church a while back. There were Catholics there, Protestants, probably some unbelievers. So we've had this wonderful opportunity. And we've been able to use this in universities as well as... Of course, it's a big challenge for Christians. So what I'm finding is we can tell how the Reformation transformed culture. And then we can say, here's some lessons for today. And so at the end of every message I give on the cultural impact... on the Here I Stand, how the Reformation saved the church and changed the world, I give lessons like, reaffirm our identity as followers of Jesus. The Reformation is not over. There are actually more reasons today for a Reformation than there were 500 years ago. And so making lessons that we can affirm the inerrancy of Scripture. Luther said the Bible never errs. So somehow there's a link. Well, if Luther said it and Calvin said it, well, maybe I need to pay more attention to it. Now, there's also bridges that we can use for believers. So one talk that I've done at several places is for believers, mere spirituality, how C.S. Lewis walked with God. So just studying Lewis's devotional life and how he lived out his faith and letting that serve as a model for us that can help challenge us for how we should follow God as academics and actually for a broader world. So I'm going to hand this over to my colleague Benjamin, but before I do, I want to show you some resources that we encourage. Well, of course, we've got lectures on the expansion of Christianity that I developed these originally as part of the Perspectives course. But the first one, the expansion of the World Christian Movement, a while back I was invited by the Department of Atheism and Marxism at Ho Chi Minh, at Vietnam National University in Ho Chi Minh City, to give this lecture. So I gave a whole lecture, which is really my perspectives talk, on how Christianity has exploded around the world, and Ho Chi Minh is standing looking over my right shoulder, and I've got the communist Vietnamese flag on the left shoulder. And of course they ask, so what happens if somebody wants, because I'm explaining how Christianity is growing so fast. Well, one reason it's growing so fast is because Jesus is so beautiful. And here's what makes him beautiful. You wouldn't want to know the kind of person I would be without Jesus. I'm really a messed up guy. But Jesus, give my testimony. And then one person over here said, so what do we do if we want to make that kind of commitment to Jesus? I'm just giving a lecture. It's just academic. But you see, without having to be disingenuous, I can be honest and respond to the questions. So even a talk about I gave a talk a while back to academics in North Vietnam on the similar topic. And they want to know, well, this Christianity sounds better than I thought it did. So last year at ELF, in one of the plenary sessions, he showed a video that he had produced for Slovakia, right?
Slovenia.
Slovenia, sorry. I love Slovenia and I love Slovakia. Yeah, my wife and I have enjoyed both countries. But in Slovenia, there are events of the Reformation that nobody outside, well, most people in Slovenia didn't know about. And this video did a great job of highlighting the Reformation. And so let's see this. And then let's have Yaroslav show his stuff, and then we can talk about your production.
Travel to many towns in southern Germany, and you'll see statues and references to a man whose name is not well known. He wasn't even German, but Slovene. He was also a reformer, a Slovene reformer, who was honored in southern Germany for his commitment to the gospel.
Was born in 1508 in what was once part of the Austrian Empire. Trained as a priest, he encountered the Reformation as a student, and then began preaching the gospel as a Catholic priest for many years before being exiled to Germany. Slovenes are known for being passionately tied to their homeland. Instead of disappearing in exile, Trubar began writing books and working on behalf of his beloved Slovenes, and not only for Slovenes. Trubar founded the world's first Bible society in Bad Urach, translating works into multiple languages and alphabets. One German church leader even called Trubar the first European, a missionary who saw the need and did something about it. Trubar even enlisted the help of Orthodox and Catholic scholars to get the best translations possible, demonstrating an open-handedness and passion for Europeans that was remarkable for his era.
Other reformers were theological innovators and movements bear their names. But Trubar focused on a simple, clear gospel. He worked with everyone and welcomed other viewpoints and issues not central to the gospel message. When he was called as a pastor to Kempten, near the German-Swiss border, the church was divided between Lutherans and Reformed. Trubar brought unity and gospel focus to a divided congregation. Throughout his life and work, he focused on what Christians have in common so they could be more effective in mission.
The armies of the Ottoman Empire were invading Europe, but the church didn't know what Muslims believe. Trubar secretly returned to Slovenia one final time. He interviewed a Bosnian general being held in Ljubljana Castle over the course of one night, and then stole back to Germany. He informed the church that Muslims honor the biblical prophets. As people of the book, the best way to stop their incursion into Europe was not with the sword, but with the gospel. Trubar envisioned retaking the lands lost to the Turks, region by region, all the way to Constantinople.
We could say much more about his loving partnership with his wife, his integrity with finances, and how he enabled the next generation to lead. As we research more and more about Trubar, we are finding ways to use him to create a platform for us evangelicals in our nominally Catholic culture. Trubar was a truly exemplary man in every area of his life.
Seeing a need and doing something about it. Gospel-focused unity and open-handedness for broader cooperation in mission. A man with a heart for people who took specific steps to reach them. A man of character who let the gospel reform and transform him. Trubar was grateful that he had been blessed, helped, and protected by the Protestants in Germany. In a later wave of the Reformation to transform others. Let's be inspired by this now-known reformer, a man who exemplifies the fruit of the Reformation.
Actually, this video was done because Brother Lindsey Brown about 4 or 5 years ago heard about Trubar actually, he heard about Trubara about 2010 on the airplane trip between Cape Town and England. It was a 747 packed as all the representatives were flying back from Cape Town to their own countries, four, five, or how many thousands of them. And as I'm sitting in my seat, there was one seat empty next to me. And behold, Brother Lindsay sat next to me, and then all the power was lost in our seats. So we couldn't watch the movies, we couldn't listen to the radio, we couldn't turn on the lights for 8 hours or 10 hours of flight. So we slept, ate, and talked. And anyway, so that was when the story of Trubar was kind of conveyed to him, and he was... We're still learning about Trubar as Slovenes, but he was really taken by the character and the work of this Slovene man, a reformer that really nobody heard of, and many professors of history, Christian history, Reform history, have never heard before. So as even we are studying and researching the whole thing, we're realizing more and more, basically almost every day, some new things. And it seems that he was one of the key men in the second wave of the Reformation, even having correspondence with men like Bullinger and others, and he was a mediator between the some of them and mentor and whatever, friend, and so on. So a couple of years ago, Brother Lindsay wanted, he said, I know I'll be talking at ELF, I know I'll be talking in different places, I want a video because the whole world needs to hear about that. So to make a long story short, we kind of pulled some friends and brothers who work on that, and when we created the movie, the short video, just to spark, give some basic information about what we have been discovering in Slovenia at this point, and what we are discovering in terms of the impact that Trubar had in his life, and the vision and the plans and ideas, and I guess we can say a little bit more later, but basically that's really the story behind the whole video. So Yaroslav, I'm looking forward to yours.
Good. So Yaroslav now will add another layer to this as the head of the East European Leadership Forum, and I've been telling audiences wherever I've spoken that they've done a better job of celebrating the Reformation in Ukraine than any other place I know of. Now, I know some of you have probably done some great celebrations, but they've really done it well. So just he's got a video piece to show us, and then examples of a couple printed, and then we'll have our panel up here.
Hello, everybody. I'm Yaroslav, and first I say I'm sorry for my English. It's horrible English, so I don't speak English. I didn't study English, never, in no school, no university, and no courses, so I'm sorry for this. It will be 10 minutes of a lot of difficulties for you hearing me and my broken language. So 2017 was really amazing year for Ukrainian church, Ukrainian Evangelical Church, by grace of God. So it's really, really very, very. I'm very astonished even thinking about what's happened last year. So in 2016. It created a committee, steering committee of anniversary of 500 years of Reformation in Ukraine, and in this committee joined people from almost 30 different Protestant denominations, and in August 2016, the president of Ukraine, he issues a decree about anniversary of Reformation in Ukraine. So we had like state law about this. So every officer in Ukraine receive a letter that he need to do something for anniversary of Reformation. So therefore, we had open doors for city halls, for universities, schools, etc. So it was an amazing possibility for evangelization, especially in intelligentsia. And also it was a year where united churches, so it was it's a great experience of unity, when really in not only in Kyiv but in regions of Ukraine, in cities, towns, created steering committees with different representatives of different Protestant denominations, that and they worked on the projects during all the year 2016 and all 2017. And also I personally and our team, we had we work on projects connected to Reformation since 2000, and when I live in Belarus before, we initiated 450 years of Reformation in Belarus. It was very similar project that united churches in Belarus and joined academic world and a lot of representative of Belarusian intelligentsia. So, and central momentum of the year of Reformation, it was the name of the program, was in a meeting of almost 200,000 evangelicals that gather on the square, Maidan Square in Kyiv in September. So I just show you some video. We'll talk the time. It was 17 September last year, and a big gathering. Devoted to anniversary of 500 years of Reformation. And Nick Vujicic, do you know Nick Vujicic? Nick Vujicic? Yeah, a famous young preacher with all legs and hands. He came and served there. Yeah, so it was, I have here documents, a lot of documents, and for example is a 25 different types of projects that happened during all the year, like conferences, hundreds of conferences, all the countries, for believers and non-believers, like books, like magazines. For example, this magazine with main message, five ideas that changed the world. Could they change Ukraine now? It's printed 109,000 copies. At all, it was printed almost 10 million different brochures. And it was prayer breakfasts in various cities, and media work in media in secular media, in Christian media, documental films. We have several different documental films, good quality about the Reformation. So, and the Eastern European Leadership Forum, I said that we had such experience for many years for how to implement these messages to practical projects on society, not only for believers but also on non-believers. So we played a very key role in all these events, generating ideas, generating projects, and also writing messages. So almost all these brochures, 10 million brochures, were written by our team, texts, I mean. And also we like ministry, we did many projects. I can show you some report. This is on our website. Our ministry is Eastern European Reformation. It's the same like Eastern European Leadership Forum. So it's like educational projects, a Christian for Christian audience and also for non-Christian audience, secular audience. Yeah, like it's here in university and here is City Hall. And like for universities, this is Darren McCarthy, by the way. Like we bought rights for Luther film, Luther movie. So in cinema in all Ukraine during 2017 was showed by churches, showed this beautiful movie, and with comments, with like speeches, yeah, about this. So it was good possibility for evangelization. Media. So we produced a lot of infographics and articles and video. For example, you receive such catalog. It's a visualized history of the Reformation. Yeah. By the way, if you want to have more such things, for example, take it home and give for people who are interested in history of educated people, you can buy it on a bookstore, and money are for the forum, yeah, for European Leadership Forum. Yeah, you can support this way. So work in media, in social media. For example, this Elia, he works all this year for Calendar of Reformation. So every day he and another people wrote a short article, what's happened this day in history of Protestantism. And we continue to do this. Yeah, like video with motion graphics, also talk shows. Articles and other media stuff like TV shows and TV program, radio programs, short video clips, like for example Reformation and education, Reformation and corruption, Reformation and medicine, Reformation and science, Reformation and value of personality, Reformation and civil rights, on civil society, other things. So also our two Eastern European Leadership Forum 2016 and 17 was dedicated to anniversary of Reformation. So we tried to prepare the church for such projects on these forums. So 500 leaders during 2016 and 17 gather and were prepared for this. Like School of Reformation, we did several times such events, School of Reformation, devoted to practical things. How do practical projects for making this anniversary in the regions of Ukraine? It was also like catalog of ideas in the beginning of the year of Reformation. I have not with me. Here is a big book with catalogs. So you find, for example, to find the projects that you can accomplish in your city, yeah? So various ideas, and also this magazine, texts, catalog of ideas, also for kids some stuff, souvenirs. And also in various cities was such stands in the city center, like here, for example, in tourist places, people can go and read about Reformation. The same stuff like in this catalog, just in the city center of tourist. So this is like presentation what happened. I just if I have just couple minutes or I finish? 2 minutes. Okay, so 2 minutes. I just read you. I read you the goals that we wrote for this program and the fruits. By the way, I believe that European Leadership Forum need to do not only conferences, but need to do round-year projects focused on society. So we can dream what we can do for Europe together with churches, with Christian organizations during all the year. Yeah, so I think it could be it could be some ideas for us. So for example, the goals of Euro Reformation was a shape evangelical, theological, ideological, historical identity for Ukrainian Protestants. Yeah, because many of Ukrainian Protestants are Orthodox inside but have Protestant jackets. Yeah, but in sense of worldview, they are not evangelical. And another is bring the good news to the Ukrainians, especially Ukrainian intellectuals, about the salvation in Christ using the historical apologetics. Another is raise the image of evangelical church by spreading the culture and civilization achievements of Reformation. Because image is very destroyed by Soviet propaganda, so we are sect for people. Yeah, and another is provide guidance in public life based on the biblical worldview through the example of Protestant Reformation. Or and five, affect the non-Protestant confessions to become more biblical and Christ-centered. And it was a goals and 10 fruits very, very quickly. The church become more united. Protestant, the second, Protestant have gained a very valuable partnership experience while implementing the joint projects. Another tens of thousands of Ukrainian Protestants become acquainted with their own history, theology, heritage. The church formulated its message addressed to the Ukrainian society. For the first time, the church came out with its message to the intelligence, to people of elite. Evangelical Christians have created their own media project. The intensive evangelization process had occurred, so it's much evangelization. The church has found a way of European integration. European integration is a national idea now, but what is European integration? Yeah, so it was a proposition how we can integrate in with Christian heritage. And the Euro Reformation legalized the status of the evangelical churches in public consciences. Evangelical Christians began to formulate their own proposals for their contribution to the national idea in this very, very crucial time in Ukrainian history. Thank you.
Well, my colleagues are the practitioners, and then we have the professional church historian here. Chuck is a professor of church history at Spring Arbor University, and now will be assisting with the European Academic Network throughout the year. But let me ask my colleagues, what lessons have you learned in what to do and not to do in using history effectively in the way that we're talking about, as a bridge to believers and as a means to ministry to believers and a bridge to unbelievers?
Well, in Slovenia, we've learned a few things several things that were not mentioned in the video that actually happened in 2017, and I'll mention some of them later. We have realized that
because there was a relationship and a cooperation between the missionaries and the foreigners and the nationals, there were some questions that came up through history that the foreigners would ask a question, who is this guy? And everybody in Slovenia, talking about Trubar, everybody in Slovenia knows who Trubar is because he's the father of the nation. He gave us, he was the first one to call the Slovenes. He's the first one to give us the books, the schools, the education. I mean, all the national identity is built upon him in the 1500s. He's actually on a 1 euro coin in Slovenian money. And so everybody knows his name, but nobody has a clue anything else. So who he was. And then even the believers, I grew up during communism in Slovenia, Yugoslavia at that time, so I knew his name, but I had no idea who the guy was. You know, he was probably a heretic or something like that. So 10 years ago, this foreigner, an American, started asking questions, and I'm thinking, you know, this is a dumb question. You know, everybody knows who Trubar is. But then he started saying, well, what do you know about him? Well, nothing. So it was a challenge for me and some other brothers. So we started listening to the questions and started opening the books and realizing that we don't have a clue. And the more we started digging, we started realizing this guy was not a heretic. You know, this guy was a great guy. This was a great man. And so one of the things that we definitely learned was how important it is to have a cooperation. And a lot of times are the foreigners who are visiting the country, they're asking what you call a dumb question, but ends up being a very important question. That a national would never ask a question because it would be somewhat embarrassing to ask a question. So that was definitely one thing that we learned throughout this process. How important it is to listen to one another, to appreciate the questions and answers and dialogue. And later on, as we were doing the 2017 events on the national level and international levels that we've never experienced or expected, it just exploded in a great sense. So we saw how important those things were. And the second part that we learned was how the history started bringing the believers together, because they started realizing we have something in common. Yeah, especially among the denominations, you know, I'm sure there's going to be denominations in heaven, and you know, so they're not going to be mixing with one another, right?
Yeah, well.
Well, we started realizing that there is so much in common because of the common roots, because of the scriptures and the basics that these men were bringing to us centuries ago, and that we could emulate their humility, we could emulate their character, we could emulate their love and patience and so much more. And those were the several things, and there are some others, but I would say those two important things that we started learning in our culture.
Okay.
About the question you just asked.
Okay.
I think what to do and what not to do. I think the most important thing is to make actualization of the history. We are not just sentimental people, and it's not only nostalgia. And history is very important tool for shaping future. And by the way, in Europe there is a huge discourse right now about European identity and about source of modernity, by the way. So and so few Protestants are involved in this. Catholics are much more involved than Protestants are in Europe. And this is paradox. This is a scandal, I think. Wow. because the Reformation is a really source, is a first source of European of modernity. I mean, in positive sense. And we are, I don't know, we are too quiet in this. And so past can create a future. So we need, when we speak about history, we need to make always actualization why we speak about this. So next point is to when we try to do all this year, not to offend Catholics or Orthodox. So even more, Reformation shaped Catholic Church, shaped Ukrainian Orthodox Church, especially at that time, 16th, 17th century, shaped all positive in this confessions created by Reformation. Me personally, I am fruit of this process because I was Catholic and evolutionary, I become evangelical. Because some people like Carpus Crusade for Christ came to Poland and start work with Catholic Church. Start work with them. Not say to them, oh, you're that just work evolutionary, okay? So I think this is important things. Another thing is in our case is that we cooperate with some politicians, and this is a danger place, you know. So we have issue of president, yeah, because some lobby work it there. and this, but it's a danger place because in politics nothing is for free. Yeah, I don't see nothing negative yet, but we need to think about this always. So,
I think that it's marvelous to celebrate the good things that God has done. I think what makes the Christian church different is that the Christian church can admit that it's done something wrong. Because we have a God who forgives. And we are fallen people, and power corrupts. And I think one of the things that we can do is we can say we were wrong, or we can say we learned this, and we can say we can forgive because God can forgive. And the Christian church is the only human organization that is always reforming and that has the Holy Spirit working in it to, when it gets off track, to bring it back. And I think that needs to be part of our story, that we are God's people, but we are fallen people, and because He loves us, He can forgive us and bring us back. And that's a message for organizations, but that's also a message for individuals. And the Christian church is the story of each individual writ large. And so I think that's something that's unique about the church, and that we can emphasize that.
That's good. So, Benjamin, I'd like for you to say a little bit more about some of these other materials that were produced. I mean, the video was kind of a centerpiece, but it's quite impressive. But what are some of the other materials you produced during the Reformation celebration?
Well, as we were working on Trubar in the last 10 years or so, the Slovene reformer, and as we started discovering that the impact that he had not only for Slovene nation, not only for the Croatian nation and the Serbian and Italian and the Germans, we started realizing he actually had an impact on Europe. And in terms of education, in terms of relationships, in terms of theology, the German reformer started asking him, what do the Muslims believe? So at the cost of his own life, he went back to Slovenia because they were after him to get him. And he went there, and as you saw a little bit in the video, he learned what Islam was all about. And that actually started shaping to our knowledge the German understanding of Islam and how to do apologetics and how to deal with Islam. And which is really interesting, it's the same question today.
Yeah.
And he gave certain interesting lines. So as we were discovering those things, we started realizing that history, I like English in this sense, because it says history, you could say that it is his story. Yeah, right. It is God's story, and it's truly, it is God's story. And if we look at history as God doing something on the stage of the world and human race, then we have a different perspective even on our lives. So I'm not the main actor, thank you, Lord. You know, but it is Him. Yeah. And he is on the stage, and he actually permits us to watch him and participate in certain acts and those things. So, as we started bringing some of those, let's say, first Slovenian books that were published in 1550 or so, the books that gave us that identity, the culture of Slovenia as a small country of 2 million. So as we were doing that, we started realizing that actually we were bringing back the blessing to the nation. So the people who were not believers don't care about God. They started cherishing that. They've already cherished the identity, the language, the culture, the books, and all these things. So I'll just give you an example. Here's the first Slovenian book, 1550. Never been translated or modernized in 460 years. By God's grace, we were able to produce the thing, translating the first Slovene, the first line in Slovene language in our literature is this. To all Slovenes, grace, peace, mercy, and true knowledge of God through Jesus, I pray for you. This is how our literature starts. I don't know of other languages. I know that the English language starts with some Beowulf, you know, poetry and stuff like that. You know, wonderful. But
starts to be.
But here is a cultural monument for the language and the culture and identity and all this thing, and it starts with the gospel.
Yeah.
So we can take the book. I do talks in schools, in public schools, because it's a national treasure. I can enter in public schools, and we can educate teachers. We can talk to the kids about the life of this guy, and just, you know, in a simple way, present the life and pictures and some other things. As you were mentioning earlier, in different places, you can bring the gospel in completely non-threatening, non-preachy way, respectful, culturally appropriate, and they are asking you, would you come back? And at one point, there was a public school where the teacher asked a student to open, to start the class while I was there with the opening sentence from the first book. To all Slovenes, grace, peace, mercy, and true knowledge of God through Jesus, I pray for you. And she videotaped it because she said, this is a monumental time for our school because the first sentence is being the first time spoken here for everybody. And you know, what do you do with that? You know, it's amazing. So media opens up, and the schools opened up. We were able to take teachers to trips to Germany and train them and educate them about this person. And they come back and they say, our lives have been changed. The educational system is now interested about us training some of the teachers and bringing into the educational system, like you were mentioning earlier, in Ukraine. It's amazing how people love their culture, love their language, and they are so, it's a wonderful bridge. And maybe one last example here in terms of literature. Here is a sample of the first Slovenian Bible, 1584. It was probably 12th or 13th language in the world to have the Bible in its own language. Okay? And has never been retranslated or modernized in all these 430 years. So the Lord, through some workings, he allowed us to start this project about 10 years ago. And in 2016, we were about to finish, and we were hoping at least to have 100 copies or something like that. Again, Slovenia is small. The best authors print 300 to 500 copies of their book. And if it sells, they do a reprint of another 100 or so. So as we were finalizing the whole project, the Slovene Bible was actually the bedrock for Slovene culture, identity, grammar, and all these things. Okay? And so as we were doing that, the Lord started putting pieces together. And a European printing Christian organization, Eastern European Mission, called us up. And they said, we're hearing that you're translating the first Slovene Bible, first time ever, after 430 years, at the time, hoping to publish it during the time of 500th anniversary. And that this is such a monumental piece in terms of culture for Slovenia, we would like to participate. So we'd like to help you. So they ended up printing 50,000 copies of the New Testament, this book, 50,000 copies.
Yeah.
I mean, when the newspapers, when they looked at the pages, said 50,000, is this a typo? Is this 500 maybe? And they couldn't believe it, and within 3 months, roughly 3 to 4 months, 50,000 copies, almost all 50,000 copies went through to the people.
Yeah.
Just to give you a sample, if each book came to one home in Slovenia, 10% of Slovene homes have the New Testament in their homes now. Why? Because the guy who wrote it, who translated it, was a Slovene 500 years ago. He's our guy. He was the one that put the foundations of the culture. We have atheists begging for this book because their friends are asking them for this book. And it's just amazing how what God can do if we use the history to gently and kindly and respectfully honor the culture and bring back what belongs to them, and at the same time bring the essence, which is really Jesus Christ and the hope in Him. So I took a little more extra time, but there's much more to be said. But just to, I'm really hoping that this is an encouragement for all of us, how God doesn't waste people and time and anything. And He can really reuse. He's the best recycler, I think. He can use and reuse things in our lives, and He never wastes things. So that's just a sample from
Wonderful. That's a great example. Okay, we've got.